Now it is time for the Friday Newscap and some voices from the news this week.
We just don't see these laws being proposed as fixing any significant problems that we're facing in Arizona. We think they are more likely the result of a very political environment, which we certainly see and understand, but we think they're more harmful for Arizona than helpful for Arizona.
They made up for this government's failures, and they found money from other sources, and they used this money for basic necessities, ballot drop boxes, PPE and other cleaning materials, rent for polling place facilities, temporary staff. Those are basic necessities when you are administering elections.
If this grant was coming from China, or if this grant was coming from Russia, we might be calling it Russian interference into our elections. So what is the difference between international money coming from a state overseas to an individual interested party, regardless of how it was spent or how desperately it was needed?
Political canvassing, going out, encouraging people to vote in your community, you know, that is not intimidating. But having an arm of the government, in this case, you know, a contractor with the Senate, going out and interrogating voters is absolutely intimidating.
And with us to talk about voting-related legislation, more confusion with the auditing of Maricopa County ballots and more, our former Arizona Attorney General Terry Goddard. Terry, good morning.
Good morning.
And Paul Bentz of High Ground. Paul, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, sir.
And Terry, let's start off with, you know, we've heard the business community in the past, whether it is SB 1070 or many other countless bills since then, where why didn't the business community step in, whatnot? Greater Phoenix leadership, Neil Giuliano, and many other business leaders have done that this time as it relates to the voting bills. What sort of impact do you think that can have, if any?
I think it can have some impact. I mean, we saw in Georgia major companies express their dismay at the voter suppression efforts that the Georgia legislature passed and the Governor Kemp signed. And here in Arizona, IGPL has gotten a little bit ahead of the curve. You know, it hasn't actually been through the legislature yet, and it hasn't gotten to the governor's desk. So I commend them for being a lot more astute than their counterparts in Georgia. And I think this is a legislature that will listen to business voices. They proclaim that they are a business-friendly group. And I think the business community understands that voter suppression is bad business. It's something that the public doesn't want. And to have Arizona, you know, joining this cavalcade of voter suppression areas is not something that is in their best interest. So I commend them. I think they're for once out in front. And what the legislature is trying to do is to undo a result they didn't like. And, you know, I've been through many elections. I like some results. I didn't like others. And every time I didn't like the result, my first thought was to condemn the system. And then when I took a hard look, especially at our system here in Arizona, I felt that it was, in spite of the fact I didn't like the way things turned out, I thought the way the process was handled was incredibly good. And we should be proud of the way Arizona elections are handled, not take these gratuitous shots after the fact.
What's the old Mo Udall quote, the former congressman from here, the voters have spoken, you know, damn them or something.
The blank.
Yeah.
Yes, the masters. Yes, that's what he said.
So, Paul, let me ask you to comment a bit, first of all, on what Terry said. So Georgia, it was after the fact we heard from Coca-Cola and Delta, among others. And then, of course, with SB 1070, the phrase, you know, getting in after the barn door was open. Do you think this makes an impact? Do you think the legislature will listen to some of these folks? Michael Bidwell included, and Michael Bidwell is a good friend of Doug Ducey.
Well, time will tell on that. I want to agree with Attorney General Goddard that we do have some of the best elections in the country. And I think that's important to point out. But at the same time, perspective is important on this type of issue. We're going to put out some polling soon, I'm sure. But what we found is an overwhelming portion of the Republican Party believes that there was significant fraud that impacted the outcome of the election. More than two-thirds of Republicans think that. So what we see our legislators, particularly in safe Republican districts, doing is responding to the people who are speaking to them. So this isn't just out of the blue. This isn't just something that they invented in whole cloth. you know, it's sort of like a movie that some people swear by and other people absolutely hate. I mean, there are people out there that love the movie Cats. We all can look at them and think that they're losing their mind.
Really? Tell me who but they some, are.
Yeah, but that, you know, but the same thing is, that's what we're looking at here. Some of these people just firmly, strongly believe that the movie Cats is good and that there was fraud in this election.
Paul, I mean, but when you talk about the percentage of Republicans who believe that there was fraud in the election, I mean, it seems like there is a straight line to former President Trump there, right? Like the President Trump and other Republicans were saying there's fraud, there's fraud, there's fraud. So I guess it doesn't, it's not terribly surprising that the people that they were talking to would believe them after a while, right? I mean, does that necessarily mean that there was?
No, it doesn't necessarily mean that there was, but I think the thing that we have to remember here is that they believe there was. And so you have to start there.
Many people believe in the tooth fairy. That does not mean that the little deer exists. And I think the complete lack of basis for the challenge that's been made and which is being perpetrated by the Arizona State Senate and their recount of Maricopa County ballots is flying in the face of, or flying without any facts to base their challenge on. And that's very disturbing. I think we need to get to that. I mean, sure, they may believe it in their heart, but that does not make it true. And I think the lack of facts in this challenge is something that we all ought to be very concerned about. Starting with the governor who certified this election. He sat there with the returns and said that it was good. So did the Republican Board of Supervisors in Maricopa County. So did the large number of very good polling officials that have, regardless of partisanship, have done their job every year and I think have done it incredibly well. So we're attacking a system without any basis for that attack, and that's simply wrong.
Paul, I want to ask you about one of the things that Terry just mentioned, which is that Governor Ducey, of course, signed the canvass while President Trump was trying to call him. He did that. He told President Trump to his face in the Oval Office that Arizona does elections well, that our elections are run professionally and there isn't fraud there. Does that make it more difficult for the governor, do you think, to sign some of these bills if they get to him?
I think it presents a challenge, especially as you mentioned, with the business communities and other calling him on him. I'm not sure, though, if that will end up making these bills not reach his desk, but maybe they are adjusted before they get there. And maybe that's the ultimate goal for some of these things. I'm with the Attorney General. I think that this election was secure. I think it was conducted well. I agree with the governor saying that. I think the challenge that they're going to run into is they have their base constituency doesn't feel that way. And so that's why they're acting the way that they're acting.
Sure. Terry, let me ask you about this reporting that was done. We're going to give credit to our friends over at the Arizona Mirror about this one, about Doug Logan, who is the one who's been tasked with leading this audit by Senate President Karen Fann, a document that conspiracy theorist attorney Sidney Powell posted on her website with various allegations against Dominion voting systems lists as its author Doug Logan. We've heard a little bit about this before. There was a tweet that he had or several tweets that were taken down. Basically going on the same narrative we've just been discussing with some of Mark's questions. What does that do to even the perception of this, even after it's already been certified? We're still going through this, and now there's more evidence that the guy who's leading it is not looking at it in an unbiased way.
The theater of the absurd has reached new levels of absurdity in Arizona. I mean, we've had a credible system for many years. It was double, triple certified in terms of the 2020 election. And now they want to recount just Maricopa County's ballots. But that's 2.2 million ballots. That's a big, big deal. And for what purpose? It astonishes me that they would put that much public expense out there when there's basically not a single fact that they can point to that shows that there were manipulated or stolen ballots. Now, this fellow Logan, some of his tweets endorsed the Stop the Steal movement that Donald Trump was leading. He clearly is not an unbiased arbiter of what's happening here. So you've now got an advocate for saying the election was not proper running the audit to find out what went wrong, if anything. And here's the thing that, you know, I've been involved in recounts. I think I know a little about them. They're very difficult. They involve a meticulous respect for the original evidence, which are the physical ballots. You cannot have them out of sight. They have to be kept very, very, the so-called chain of evidence is absolutely critical here. And they're talking about having hundreds of volunteers come in to handle this recount. And I just, if Logan wasn't suspect enough, the use of volunteers makes the whole process laughable. And yet it's going to be conducted. It's going to be done at our expense. And it's going to take months. And the only victim, I think, is going to be the Arizona election system, which is you know, you've got a guy counting the ballots who says before he even starts that there was fraud.
Well, Paul, how does that complicate things when you mentioned that two-thirds of Republicans feel as they do with the polling? And then you add someone in like this who you know, we had Christine Jones on last week. She is convinced that this guy, regardless, is not going to be able to doctor things. So regardless of what he wants the result to be, he's going to find just what every other audit has found. But the perception of the idea of this guy being involved in it, if in fact all this, all of his background is in fact true, what does that do for the overall issue of Republicans who still don't believe?
Well, one of the things that the Mirror pointed out in that article or the other one that was about this is that there's in that contract, which is very telling, they have something about expected results. And I think that's the biggest thing that is most telling and most troubling is who's, quote unquote, expected results. And that's one of the things that we're looking at. If it was a pure audit, I do tend to believe, and with everyone else, that they're not going to find anything. But if they go down the rabbit hole of this expected results, if you're looking for something that's not there, sometimes you tend to find it. And that's back to the Attorney General's point about the tooth fairy. Maybe if they were the data tooth fairies instead of the data ninjas, maybe we would have a better result here and have people find it a little bit more believable.
Terry, one of the other aspects of this contract that a lot of folks have found troubling is the idea that there are going to be folks going into particular precincts around Maricopa County and basically asking voters, like, are you really there? Like, did you vote? And there's been some talk that, you know, they're not going to ask who they voted for or how they voted, but just knocking on the door saying, you know, we're here from the Senate Audit Committee or whatever they're going to be saying. A lot of folks have been saying that constitutes voter intimidation. Is that something that you would agree with?
I guess there's nothing about this process that I can agree with. Why would you do a post-election poll 6 months after, more than 6 months after the election itself, to see somehow what? Does the election total tally with what you find from the people, the voters that you interview? I don't know what the purpose is, except, again, to cast aspersions on the election process, if in fact that's what it does. Paul is far more of an expert on polling than I am, but it just seems like not only by the source of the questioner do you bias the result, but, you know, you don't ask a polling question just blind. It seems to me that the only purpose for this poll is to somehow cast a suspicion upon the results of the election. I think anybody will tell you that election is a snapshot on that particular day in November. People could change their minds one way or the other afterward. I don't know what validity their polling result has to whether or not the election was valid.
Well, Paul, and to the issue of timing, I mean, some folks have brought up the idea that, you know, since November, people may have moved or, you know, people probably won't answer the door, you know, COVID or not. You know, if somebody says that they're from the government and they're here to help, as Ronald Reagan famously said.
Right.
So, like, what do you, like, is this just an effort to sow doubt that, you know, the auditors couldn't prove something by going out into these communities, so therefore there must be something wrong? What's the point of that?
It's absolutely fraught with peril from start to finish. I mean, going door to door to people to ask them stuff. One of the things that we find out very early in polling and has continued to be the case is that people lie. It's an unfortunate fact of the matter that people lie to you. We did a survey once where I asked people who had never voted in a primary election before, like, what's a reason you wouldn't participate in a primary? They said, oh, I always vote. More than half of the people who voted in the election said, oh, I absolutely vote, even though we had history that showed that 0% of these people had voted. So that's one challenge, is if you ask them if they voted, they're more likely than not to say, oh, sure, even if they didn't. And you're right. People move. People change their mind. All sorts of things take place here. And so it's a place that is fraught with irregularities just by its built-in way it is conducted. And then if you point to that as being the shining example of what the problem is or where the faults lie, you're getting a false positive there. It's so much bias to that point. What we do when we do survey research is we always try our best to do everything we can to eliminate bias. And that type of strategy to go door to door and talk to folks and sort of demand their answer, but not really demand their answer, is fraught with bias that will definitely leave some concerns there.
That is Paul Bentz. Go ahead, Terry, briefly, please. Yeah.
Come in on that point, and this is ancient history, but I think it's relevant. Back many years ago when we did the election for bringing districts to the Phoenix City Council, the district proposal won by, as I recall, less than 1%. It was a real squeaker election, relatively low turnout. And the post-election survey of voters, I think taken within the month of the election, very, very soon thereafter, showed that it was winning by 10%. So, you know, people sort of looked at the result and said, okay, I must have been on that side if I had voted. And it was completely different from the actual election result.
Well, to make a very old sports reference, when Wilt Chamberlain scored 100 points in a game, apparently 5 million people saw it, even though there was only maybe 10,000 people there. So that's what happened.
Right, exactly.
Former saw that one.
Terry, let me start with you on this one. As a former attorney general, Attorney General Mark Brnovich says that Pima County, other entities can't continue to enforce their mask mandates. Tempe took a step last night with their city council, and this is regardless of what Governor Ducey wants. What do you make of that ruling? Is that significant going forward as we continue with the pandemic?
I think the governor's abdication in this area sort of unfortunately cut the ground out from under businesses and cities and counties who want to continue to enforce a public health standard requiring masks. But I think he was right legally. He did the right thing. And I think in this case, a really gutsy thing, because he stood up against the governor of his party and essentially said that under the public health standards, the counties have the right, they have the power to determine what is in the best interest of the citizens of that county. And the governor doesn't have an override authority as he claimed he did. So cheers for Mark Brnovich.
Paul, we keep coming back to the word enforcement we have through this entire time, and that has been something that almost seemed like the governor on another program earlier this week was sort of laughing at Mayor Kate Gallego of Phoenix for, you know, like her standards are really tough, et cetera. What difference does this really make? Obviously, coming from the attorney general has some significance, but on a practical level, what do you think?
Well, on a practical level, this is all theater, right? I mean, the governor makes some big pronouncement that everything's open for Easter and then gets in a fight with Phoenix about things being closed. And then we've got this fight over mask mandates and what it really means. And then when they get shot down on that issue, they say, oh, it's not a big deal anyway, because nobody really enforces it, and kind of tries to poo-poo it away. I mean, I think from the Brnovich side of this, this is sort of a sneaky way for him to continue to build his credibility this time in Pima. You got to not lose Pima badly if you're running for governor in the future, which some say he might be thinking about doing. In fact, Governor Ducey only lost Pima County by 10,000 votes last time around. So I think this is a way to maybe build some cred in Pima County, and maybe with some local elected officials. Local mayors are incredibly popular throughout the state. Local government, in fact, is the most popular type of government. So maybe this is a way for the attorney general to endear himself a little bit with some local government and encourage some local control while he does some other things.
How cynical can you be? I mean, he's got the law on his side. Isn't that enough?
Terry, let me ask you also, as a former mayor, we've seen a few cities, Phoenix, Tucson, and Flagstaff, have said and said generally around the time, or in a couple cases before AG Brnovich issued his opinion, that they would continue the mask mandate. We heard most recently from Tempe that says it will also continue its mask mandate. Does this opinion give cities cover to some extent, even though the governor has said that he's not going to challenge these cities in court? Does the opinion give the cities cover to do something like this?
Oh, I think it does, but I think Paul makes the right point. It's become theater. It is the folks that I feel badly about are the small business folks, the restaurants in particular, who are caught between literally Scylla and Charybdis. They are, on the one hand, they have some customers who refuse to wear a mask. They may feel that the best thing for their employees and for their other customers is to require one. And there are going to be some very nasty confrontations here and nothing to back them up. They can say that, well, the governor's on my side or the mayor's on my side. And it just causes a shouting match. And it means that we have taken the responsibility for public health and devolved it to the individual business. And I think that's the ultimate tragedy here. They shouldn't have to make these decisions. That should be done for at the state level, at the very least at the city level. But now you've got the two fighting with each other. What does a small business do? And I frankly think we put them in an untenable position.
Paul, at the risk of asking a cynical question and incurring Terry's ire once again, I'm curious about what you said about how this maybe helps Mr. Brnovich if he decides to run for governor next year. I mean, as political scientists and folks like, you know, folks like you say, that's a long time from now in calendar time, but also politically, it's an eternity from now. Do voters really, will they remember him saying that Pima County and Tucson can keep their mask mandates? Like, is that really something that helps him?
I think it's about 581 or something around there, 500 days till the 2022 election.
It
is
around
the corner, my friend. No, I got to tell you, it is not too far in advance. And the things that he's doing on some of these immigration issues and some of the court issues and the arguments he's doing to bolster his conservative cred, this helps him on the other side of the aisle. This helps him with the sort of the middle ground and on some of those local municipal electeds. It's the same thing we're seeing the governor do right now in some of his stuff. He's trying to build back his Republican credibility so that he, on a national level, looks like a national figure, opened up the state, one of the earliest people to do that. You know, the things that he's doing lets him be a national Republican so that he is situated in the future to be viable as well. It's already started, guys. I'm not being cynical here. The truth of the matter is that the 2022 election's already in full swing.
And we already got the report of Mark Kelly, his first quarter fundraising, which went quite well for him. Terry, let's talk about more of what Paul was alluding to as it relates to Governor Ducey. He came out again very strongly criticizing the Biden administration. He has been on Fox News a lot of late. That's a shocker in terms of trying to get, I think, some voting support there as well. What about what he's saying about the border issues makes sense to you? And to invoke again, as Mark said, to risk your ire about being cynical about politics, how much of it is just the message, the visual, the optics?
Well, it's my turn to be cynical, I think. you know, I was in office the last time the Border Patrol, National Guard was mobilized to the border. It was all theater. There's nothing practical that they can do to help the sheriffs and the mayors and the other people that the governor has said are in such trouble. You know, we have laws in this country that doesn't allow our military to do law enforcement. So what do? They sit back and hand out supplies or perhaps run the motor pool. It is not a critical function, but it has tremendous, let's say, sex appeal to the media. And it looks like he's doing something when he's not. The word crisis has been kicked around so often, you know, back in the early 2000s, late 90s, several million people a year were coming to the border and being turned away. The numbers are a fraction of that today, but yet it's being heralded as far more of a crisis than it was then. So it's all a matter of perspective. I think the big issue right now is unaccompanied children and what you do with them. The Trump administration put them in cages and the Biden administration is trying to take care of them. I think that is a big difference, but the numbers themselves are generated far to the south of us by just local unrest and serious problems in other countries, and there's nothing we can do about that.
Paul, back to the phrase that Terry used, sex appeal to the media, yes, but is it also sex appeal to the voters, and is that why someone like Governor Ducey does this?
Immigration is way up in the polls right now. It's returned to be the number one issue. 39% of Arizonans think it's the top issue. It's surpassed education for the first time in about the past 4 years. It's the highest it's been since 2010. And 61% of Republicans think it's the top issue. What we're really seeing here is back to the point about the governor building conservative credential and something that the attorney general said, that's also true. We're starting at the moment, I feel like we've got a little bit of a 2010 vibe going on post Obama's first election, going into that midterm, a high focus on immigration, a lot of conservative and Republican efforts. The Tea Party movement was at full swing. We're seeing sort of that same vibe go on here. And yes, absolutely, enforcing the border and addressing immigration issues is a huge issue, particularly among the base. And it's a way that the governor and others can build some support from their coalition and draw attention to something that's top of mind right now.
Paul, for how long has, and maybe you don't have the numbers on this, for how long has immigration been such a top issue? Because for a while, it seems like it was maybe not quite as top of mind.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark, you're right. So it's been up and down. Basically, for the past 4.5 years, education has been the top issue in the state of Arizona. Before Red for Red and sort of during that, it crested, and then it's come down a little bit. With the pandemic, we saw healthcare rise up a little bit and some other things. Immigration's traditionally been the second highest issue. It popped up twice, one during the caravan and one during the unaccompanied minors. But this is much higher than that. At this moment, at 39%, it's really high. We'll see if it's a blip and if it comes back down. But at this moment in time, it's much higher than it's been in the past 4 years or so.
Right. So, Terry, if the governor wanted to really do something to make a difference, to really help out the situation, you mentioned that there are laws, for example, that preclude the National Guard from doing certain things at the border. Are there things that the state and the governor could actually do that might make things better there? Or is everything basically just for optics?
So much is optics. I agree with the governor on the fundamental point that he made, which sort of gets to your question, which is, this is really a federal responsibility. The state is in an ancillary role, occasionally tries to make it more so, but the state has responsibilities for healthcare, to some degree, but the housing is a federal responsibility. The detained individuals, and that's been a big part of this crisis, is the condition under which people are detained at the border. And I think both administrations have suffered because of inhuman conditions there. So what can the state do? The best we can within the laws, but you need a federal partner. And that's one of the things. I think he's right that Governor Ducey said in his last press conference when he announced the new chief of the National Guard. But then he said he was going to send the National Guard to the border anyway, sort of putting a new person in charge and then giving them orders as to what they have to do. It was an interesting press conference.
Gentlemen, down to our final 30 seconds or so. Really fun putting you on the spot question. So, Paul, we saw that Governor Ducey is joining a Mike Pence advisory group. What do you think the chances are Governor Ducey actually runs for president someday?
I think the chances right now is that he's trying to get into the vice president mentioning game. I mean, I think that's number one right now, is to be sort of the top of the list, falling behind Pence. And I can tell you, it certainly, they look the part to come from the same Lego play set. So maybe, I mean, they go together pretty well. But I think it's more of a VP aspiration at the moment. But I do think one day that certainly could be the case.
Terry, briefly, just to put you on the spot there.
On that one,
not about the Lego part, the running for president part.
Well, I think it's always been the aspiration. I think the handling of the pandemic basically enraged both sides. The maskers and the anti-maskers feel that the governor let them down, and I think that gives him relatively few legs to stand on. I know he's trying to resuscitate it. I like Governor Ducey; he's a nice guy, but I think in terms of public policy, he's waffled one time too many.
Okay. Former Attorney General Terry Goddard. Terry, thanks as always.
Thank you.
And Paul Bentz of High Ground. Paul, we forgot to ask what you were wearing, but thanks as always. Take care.
Thank you. Have a good day.